Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. This is Genuinely Grace. I hope you're well. And as things, kids go back to school and things start to kick back in again, I hope everything's good for you. There's been a lot of chat with my group about people who are kind of looking to new directions. This seems to be something in the air. So, it's a very interesting time right now. And very exciting week coming up, because the Sober Club is a year old. I can't believe it. Oh my goodness. It really does not feel like a year. Just last week was the week that my TEDx talk, Sobriety Rocks, Who Knew? If you haven't watched it, please go onto YouTube and watch Sobriety Rocks, Who Knew? Or you can watch it at the Sober Club. And give me a like and a little message. This was the day a year ago, or 31st of August, I think it was. It was the date a year ago that went live on YouTube and people got to see it. So that was exciting. As I say, Monday the 7th of September is our 1 year anniversary of the Sober Club. It's been such a journey, just amazing, really. When I first started it, I've said this a few times, when I first launched the club, I did it because I wanted to sort of offer stuff around health and well-being. There was a lot out there around ditching the booze, and I wanted something for the what next, you know, the as well as sort of thing, you know, when everything's really underpinned by self-care and just optimum health and well-being. And we have really covered such an amazing selection of things in the club. So it has been really exciting. And obviously, if you're interested in joining us, now is the time. We are having a fabulous celebration online. Sadly, would have been in person, but fabulous celebration on Monday. So if you join us in time for that, we've got some amazing special guests and a fabulous virtual goodie bag. We're kind of doing a mini launch, if you like, relaunch of the Sober Club. And then I'm going to close it up for a little while, close the doors for a little while we just get acquainted with our new members. And we've got some lovely new features coming on board. So if you do want to join us, now is the time. It's at this price. It's the, you know, cost of a bottle of Prosecco or something. Not that you want that. If you join us now, you get some fabulous goodies as well. We've got a wonderful new subscription gift for those people who join up in next week, kind of now or next week. Glenn Harold is a guy who I interviewed on the podcast. He's a leading hypnosis author, and he's gifted us one of his great recordings, Mindfulness for Releasing Anxiety. This is so good, and it's suitable for everyone, whatever stage you're at. This is great. So if you join the Sober Club, you get that free of charge, and that's worth $10.99. And there's a little exclusive motivation audio from me as well. And if you did decide to join us for a year, then you get 2 months free and a laser coaching call with me. I'm going to offer that to the first 25 people who sign up for a year. So you get 2 months free and a little laser coaching call with me. That's like a 20-minute coaching call where we get clear on what you want, really, on your goals. And don't forget, the club is for you if you're sober curious, if you're just starting, or if you've been sober for years. We've got members who are 6 years sober, and they love it because we focus on the everything, on the mindfulness and the mindset and the nutrition and the fitness and the relationships and the passion and purpose and literally all of that. This week we've got a great video interview with a hormones expert. We've got some amazing stuff. Anyways, it's thesoberclub.com. That's where you have to go. And we recorded this week's podcast guest. I actually did it as a live session for our members. So afterwards, after our session, they got to ask some personal questions as well. But I thought that would be a fun way of recording the podcast. So It might sound very slightly different, but not too much. But I really hope you enjoy this interview. It's registered nutritionist Rob Hobson. And we're going to be talking all about sleep. I mean, man, is that a thing? Is that a thing for all of us? So enjoy the interview.
My guest is registered nutritionist Rob Hobson. And I spoke with Rob on the Club Soda Mindful Drinking Festival, which was fantastic fun. And we had a really good chat about nutrition. And that interview is out there for everyone to see. But since that interview, I've realized that Rob is not just a nutritionist. He's king of sleep and sober sleep as well. So and it's something that comes up so often. So I thought it'd just be fantastic to invite him on, and to chat about sleep. And we're doing this live so that some of our Sober Club members can chat to Rob as well and get to ask some questions. So Rob, thank you so much for being part of this. Tell us a bit about your background.
Yes, so I, as you said, I'm a nutritionist. So I've worked for the last 15 years in nutrition. I've done lots of different things really in my job. So I started off in public health actually. And then I moved into working for myself, and I've worked with many wellness brands, lots of different brands. And I've traveled all over the world with these brands, and I've got private clients. I've authored the Detox Kitchen Bible cookbook and also The Art of Sleeping, which you just mentioned about sleep. And I kind of just get involved in everything to do with nutrition, really. I'm not very specific. I just, like I said, I work with brands, I work with individuals, I work with charities, all sorts of organisations, anywhere where there's some input needed in terms of nutrition and health.
Yeah. And I think what was great when we did our last chat, why I really love chatting to you is because you've got a really kind of balanced approach about everything. And I think that's the only way it's going to work, isn't it? You know, we all know that just to talk nutrition for a moment before we move to sleep. But, you know, we all know that sort of fad diets don't work and excessive anything doesn't work, really. So your approach is very much about balance.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm not sure if that's because I'm a bit long in the tooth or and I've seen a lot of stuff come and go. But I'm definitely about balance, because like I said, I've been around for a little while and I've seen fatty diets come and go. I've seen the latest health chart. I've seen it all come back and forwards, and it all kind of just goes full circle to kind of balance. And actually what we've got now, which is quite interesting, is just trying to entangle it with people and get people back to basics, which is quite difficult when they have got all these other ideas now, which is bombarding us through the internet, through social media, and often by people that aren't really qualified to give out that kind of information.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly when it comes to ditching the booze, you know, nutrition is one of the biggest factors in making it easier, really, and just helping that transition from drinking every night and absolutely poisoning your body to sort of getting well. And I've said many times, you know, I didn't do it right, even though I used to think I was queen of healthy eating. Actually, I forgot everything in my first few weeks of ditching the booze. I literally forgot the lot. And I've had so many clients, in the last few months and Sober Club members who often say, people usually start off by saying, oh, my diet's really good. I always used to say that. But then when you look into it, actually, you're not really providing yourself with the right nutrients to sort of help with your brain chemistry and all of that. So just before we get into sleep per se, do you have a few tips for those early weeks? But we have a few people here who are on day one, or maybe they did a few months or a few weeks and then they tripped up and now they're back again. And I'm always trying to say, try and help yourself through food. So what would be your top tips for people in those early weeks?
Well, first of all, we talked about this when we talked last time. Don't try and do everything at once. So if you're doing it for, we talked about weight loss, actually, didn't we?
Yeah.
If you're doing it for weight loss purposes, then, you know, give yourself a bit of a break. Don't suddenly give like, right, I'm going to give up the booze, I'm going to give up sugar, I'm going to give up this, I'm going to give up that, because it's all probably going to go a bit wrong. Much. So take it slowly, focus on giving up the booze, and take little steps in terms of your nutrition side of things, especially if you're trying to lose weight, because I think the accumulation of all those little small changes has the best results. If you're going to do one thing, maybe focus on one thing as well. So for me, eat more fruit and vegetables. Like, it's really simple, but maybe just focus on that. Some people go and get their ketogenic diet book out and they start like going crazy. just give yourself a few little targets. I'm going to stop eating so much sugar. I'm going to eat more fruit and veg. It's really easy. It's going to have a benefit to your health. And that's just a nice change.
Yeah.
I think they're probably two of my things. Just don't do everything at once and just make it, just make lots of small changes to start with to your health. Don't think you have to just go crazy on some sort of massive health kick just because you're giving up booze and you feel like that's what you should do.
No, I agree. I think, as you say, to focus on what you're adding in rather than what you're taking away is great.
Definitely. I mean, definitely focus on the positive and try not to focus too much on the negative.
So let's get to sleep then. Your book, The Art of Sleeping, it is the thing that I think it kind of rocks people a bit, because I know that most of us, when we first stop drinking, we fully expect to suddenly have amazing sleep. Mm-hmm. It definitely didn't happen for me. It took weeks, and I was really fed up that this was the case. But I was really glad that I was able to read a little bit about it, because otherwise I'd have thought I was the only one. and you know, one by one, people have told me that they have different issues. So can you just, you know, start by explaining why it is that our sleep is so disrupted? Maybe start by telling us why it's disrupted when we're drinking, and then why it's not perfect the minute we stop.
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of reasons why we can't sleep. And actually, interestingly, I guess some of those reasons are also linked to our alcohol consumption. So a lot of people use alcohol as a sedative and to release, you know, reduce anxiety, to help them to forget about things that are going on. But obviously there are issues that can prevent you from sleeping. So, I mean, alcohol in itself, you know, it can keep you awake, so it can dehydrate you. So it disrupts your sleep, because you're going to make visits to the bathroom, probably. That's disruptive sleep. You maybe, it affects your REM sleep. And this is the very restorative stage of sleep. So what happens when you drink is you suddenly go into a very deep sleep if you've had quite a lot to drink. But then it's a very cagey sleep. So you're not getting that REM, you're getting lots of deep. And then you go into REM sleep and it's firing your brain into sort of overdrive, and you have that twitchy sort of just totally disrupted sleep. So alcohol is not going to be of benefit, basically, to help you sleep, but people still think it is. So I think the other thing is also the effect of how mentally on you when you've drunk. Some people give themselves a really hard time, and that is going to play on your mind, and that can also prevent you from sleeping. That side of things, you know, you might think to yourself, why did I have that drink? I really didn't need it. And now I'm giving myself, you know, crap, and that is on my mind. That's stopping me to sleep. So I think there could be countless reasons. Biologically and mentally. Yeah.
And you're right. We do have this perception that alcohol helps us sleep, don't we? We have this perception that, oh, I need a drink to help me sleep. And yet we all know that actually the truth of it is we usually wake up at 3 a.m. or, as you say, absolutely hate ourselves.
Yeah. But also it makes you drowsy, right? So you think, right, if I'm going to get drowsy, it's going to make me to sleep. But like I said, you might fall to sleep, but you won't have you'll have a very disrupted sleep. Mm. Not always, but, you know, often.
Yeah. And so this other question then, part two of the question, when you do stop drinking, what's the process? Because, you know, it can take a while. Obviously, it varies from person to person. But, you know, certainly for some people, it can take several weeks before sleep becomes kind of regulated. What's that all about? Is it kind of everything recalibrating?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure, to be honest. But I think part of it is breaking the habit. So I think what you're trying to do is break a habit. So at night, you might start to feel a little bit anxious because you're not having that drink and you think that's what helps you to sleep. So that could be playing a role. Biologically, I'm not entirely sure. I'm sure your body just gets used to the alcohol as a way of helping you to sleep. And obviously when you don't have that. But for me, I think it's more that anxiety, that twitchy feeling like, oh, I don't really know what to do myself. I really want to drink, but I don't want to have a drink. And then you don't really know what to do with yourself. And that is not helping your mind to relax and get yourself ready for sleep. You know, a lot of stuff is going into overdrive. So for me, it's that side of things. Mm.
So the age old question then, how much sleep do we need?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. So obviously we're told 8 hours, but very few people actually get 8 hours. Most people in the UK get about 7.5 hours sleep. Quite a large percentage get about five, less than five in some cases. I mean, there is a theory that everybody's different, and actually there's this 8-hour myth. and the fact that, you know, some people naturally need less. I actually did a DNA test, and although this isn't massively scientifically proven, it actually said it's in my DNA to only need to have 5 hours sleep.
Really?
Function optimally. Yeah, which I thought was strange. I mean, the whole reason I wrote this book is because I really suffered with insomnia. And it was just a little bedside book that had everything in it that I had used to help me to sleep. And just, it wasn't, you know, massively overcomplicated, just lots of tips and tricks and hacks to help you get to sleep. But yeah, most people get about 7.5. I mean, what the science says on 7.5 is that's what you need for your body to regenerate and, you know, everything else is to produce growth hormone. Your brain is figuring out what's going on and putting thoughts and memories into process. So I think if you get 7.5, you're doing okay.
And I suppose, as you say, the important thing is that you manage to go through all those cycles. Can you just explain to us again what those sleep cycles are and why they're so important?
Yes. So you have sleep cycles. So the first stage is a very light sleep. Then you'll go into deep sleep. And that's where the brain is actually shutting off and the body sort of regenerating. And your body, you don't have a lot of deep sleep. So if any of you've got Fitbits and you're looking at the data going, oh my God, I don't get enough deep sleep, I need to change this, your body doesn't want to be in deep sleep for long. The first few cycles are 90-minute cycles across the night of those four stages. Your body's is in protective mode. So only a couple of those cycles, it'll actually go into deep sleep because you're quite vulnerable. If you imagine, you know, we've had these cycles since dawn. So if you imagine cavemen, they wouldn't want to be asleep in this very, very deep sleep for very long. If something happened, you wouldn't wake up. So after that, we have two light, one deep, and then we have REM. And REM is where we dream. That's where the brain is working to process memories and everything else. And that's very restorative. And that's the stage that we'll have also before we wake up on the last cycle before we rise. So essentially it's light, deep, and then REM.
Yeah. And what about timings then? Because again, you know, I've heard nutritionists say you should go to sleep really early. Somebody I interviewed last week was saying it should be 10. And then, but then other people say it doesn't matter. So, but you know, isn't there this thing whereby sort of, I don't know, if you look to tradition, then it would be when the sun goes down we should be resting, and when the sun's up, I don't know, what is the truth? Well,
interestingly, this is also built into your DNA. So we have the circadian rhythm, and this is lots of biological processes that happen over a 24-hour period, and that actually developed because in Africa, where we all originate from, they have a set 12 hours of daylight, 12 hours of noon, and that's night and daylight. That's what they have, and that's how we developed. Some people have a chronotype that makes them more larks, so they naturally want to wake up early and they want to go to bed early. Other people are naturally built into their DNA to be owls, so they naturally go to bed late and wake up late, and that's kind of it. So you're one of the two. I'm definitely a lark. I'm a bit of a granny. So I like to be in bed at like 9:30, but then I'll get up at about 5:00. Whereas I know friends will not go to bed till 1:00 in the morning, and they'll want to get up later. The problem is society is not built really for owls. So there's a problem that it can be a bit of a problem if you're a night owl and it's really hard for you to break that cycle, but you have like a 9-to-5 job. This can have quite an implication on how you feel in the day. So that is quite an adjustment, and you can't really change your chronotype. It's really difficult for somebody that's a proper night owl to say, go to bed at 10 o'clock. It's probably not going to happen. So I think this is one of the interesting things about these chronotypes and how it impacts on how you feel in the day, how awake and energized you feel.
There is
research actually on other chronotypes, like a bear and a dolphin and all these things. And apparently a lot of the nation is bears, which means you crave sleep, and it's difficult for you to get up in the morning. You want to go back to bed all the time. You know, and they've got these wonderful sort of descriptors. So if you're a lion, you're amazing. You're really highly achieving. You get up early. You're like Superman. You never feel tired. And then there's this poor bear that's like, I don't want to do anything.
Do you want the PJs on?
So you're not defined by your chronotype. It's just there's these typical, you know, owls are very creative but procrastinators, whereas larks are very go-getting and doers and stuff like that. But
Who knows?
But I think one thing that is true is that in those early weeks when you're ditching the booze, self-care is really important, and actually kind of taking yourself off to your cocoon is actually a very big part of that. And I often tell people if they if going out doesn't feel right, or if they just feel exhausted, or they've got the wine witch screaming in their head, just take yourself off to bed, you know, write a gratitude journal or whatever, and actually just go and be kind to yourself. But what is a good protocol around, what's the expression? Sleep hygiene, that's the expression, isn't it? tell us your top tips.
Yes, so I called it BED in my book. I use this acronym BED, which is your behaviour, your environment and your diet. And I thought that, well, these three elements, if you could get those right, you could create your own sort of sleep ritual.
I love that.
So, so your behaviour is kind of what you do before you... I mean, it's all related to sleep hygiene. So your behaviour is kind of what you do before you go to bed. So are you watching your laptop with all that blue light, and is that stopping you? Because blue light stops you producing melatonin, and melatonin is the trigger for sleep. So are you doing that? Are you maybe doing other behavioral things that are keeping you awake? The environment is what you're talking about, your sleep oasis. And this was the biggest revelation for me. You could have said to me ages ago, oh, your bedroom needs to be XYZ to help you to sleep. And I'd have been like, really? I don't know. But since I've actually made changes to my room, I sleep much better. And it's keeping the room really cool, keep it really dark. I wash my bedding twice a week because I love that. I have the best sleep when I get into that lovely
fresh linen.
I put so much fabric conditioner in my bed, in my wash, because it just makes you feel really cozy, like when I go to bed. And the other thing as well, I keep it all really clean. Like, your bedroom should just be for sleep. You know, this is really obvious stuff. I always get told, oh, well, I don't know why you're telling people this, because everybody knows it, but people don't do it. So I think everybody knows what to do, but they don't do it. So my bedroom looks like a hotel room. I've got my bed, my side tables. I know there's nothing under the bed, which helps me to relax. And I know my wardrobes are clean inside, because anything can play in your mind when you're struggling with insomnia. Anything at all can get your mind working, focus on something. And actually, that being really organized and having everything super clean and tidy and everything, for me, that was the biggest thing to help me to sleep. Because seriously, I'm a messy person, and my room looked like my wardrobes had just like vomited clothes everywhere, and I never cleaned them up like a teenager. But that was the biggest thing for me. So I think feeling really organized, you know, rituals as well, the things you do, work out what it is that helps you to sleep. So do you have a chamomile tea before you go to bed? Do you have a bath and put your pajamas on a few hours before you go to bed? You know, do you eat at a certain time? I think when you get a routine and a pattern, that's the best thing you can do to help yourself to sleep. I mean, we do it with babies to sleep train them. Look at me, like I've got kids. I haven't. But I know that you might want to sleep train your child. You know, you give them a muzzy, you give them a bottle at the right time of day, you give them a kutch, and then you put them to bed, and the bedroom's all nice and clean and tidy and cool. And we kind of forget all of that, and then we don't do it for ourselves. So, yeah, find out what sleep ritual works for you and just try and stick to it every night to get into a routine and a pattern. And take that away with you as well. Lots of people are when you get to travel, you know, I do things like I take a pillowcase away with me because I like my my nice pillowcases. And I take a candle because I like the smell of the candle I burn here. And it just helps me to relax, especially if it's something with work, like I'm traveling with work.
And is it important to go to bed and get up at more or less the same time?
Yeah, absolutely. That is the thing. And it's the thing you can do. Your circadian rhythm works like clockwork. So the best, if you can go to bed at the same time and wake up at the same time, you know that you're going to get into that lovely cycle. So, you know, when you set your alarm and it's really weird that you eventually don't actually need to wake you wake up just before the alarm goes off on the dot, and it's really strange. And that is your circadian rhythm in perfect balance. That is you, literally, you've got it, you've nailed it. When we start moving about different times and not sleeping, and I think this is a thing with drinking as well, you can be quite erratic with when you go to bed. You might end up sat on your laptop staying up or whatever it is that you do. You're out drinking or whatever. So, yeah, one of the best things you can do is get that right. And you feel really centered then. It's a really nice feeling, you know, when you know everything's working like clockwork.
Is it possible to have too much sleep?
Yeah, definitely. So you can get this sort of sleep inertia. I mean, if you get too much sleep, it can be just as tiring as not getting enough. So yes, definitely. And there's no such thing as catching up on your sleep, really. You know, some people say, I'm just going to lie in bed all weekend. Your body doesn't know it's the weekend. Your body's like still got this clock ticking inside. So that's more you thinking that you need. And if you just lie in bed all weekend, catching up on your sleep, you're not going to wake up feeling very nice on Monday morning.
Well, what about naps then, on that note of the kind of catch up? Oh, I'll have a nap in the afternoon, that kind of theory.
Yeah, so there's a theory about naps. So there's this guy called Nick Littlehales who wrote a book, and he talked about these 90-minute cycles, and he told you to work out how many cycles you needed to get your 7.5 hours sleep. My maths isn't great. Is that 5? Yeah, I think it's 5. And he said for every cycle that you miss, you can have a small nap in the day. And he recommended that you don't nap for more than 20, 25 minutes, because as soon as you go beyond that, you enter deep sleep. And that's when you get that weird sleep inertia when you wake up. So, yeah, if you're feeling really tired in the day and you haven't slept, I don't see the point in sitting there like a nodding dog. I think it's perfectly fine to close your eyes and have a bit of a cat nap, but just don't do it too long. I think he suggested to have an espresso just before your nap, so when it kicks in, you wake up.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that theory.
Yeah, I think that depends how sensitive to caffeine you are.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just don't do too much. And even at uni, I used to just put my head on the desk when I was younger, just for 5 or 10 minutes. And that was enough to shake off that horrible feeling that you know, when you just really can't get it together. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. I've got a couple of questions I just want to throw at you from members. One person said, I go to bed about 10 or 11 p.m., but I wake around 2 a.m., or 3 a.m. and I can be awake then for about an hour. It doesn't make me too stressed. I still keep quite calm and then eventually go back to sleep. But it doesn't feel quite as energized during the day when that happens as if it goes through. So I suppose the question really is one that many of us have, which is, you know, why do some people just sort of wake up? And sometimes, you know, you're awake for quite a while and you just can't get back to sleep. And that can really stress people out. That's how people can, if you lie awake really panicking, it can feel really stressful. Because particularly if you lie awake thinking, oh my God, I've got such a busy day ahead and I can't get to sleep.
Yeah, that is really stressful. I mean, I guess, I don't really know. I mean, I guess it could be a habit that you've got into. So I'm a bit like that, and I end up 1 o'clock on the dot, I wake up. And I think it's just that maybe I've got into that habit because of not sleeping. So you really need to address maybe some of the issues around maybe what's playing on your mind. So maybe keep a diary, jot down what you've got to do the next day. You know, even subconsciously, you might not realize that this stuff is playing on your mind. that could be you might find nice meditative ways, breathing exercises that can help you to get to sleep. Because the thing is to try not to get your brain to start firing up and start thinking about things once you're awake, because that's really annoying. I mean, I often just get up and I say to people, if you're really lying there and you just can't get back to sleep, don't just lie there staring at the ceiling. I think you're better off getting up and doing part of your sleep ritual that helps you to sleep. So get a nice tea, whatever it is, a herbal tea, sit on the sofa, keep the lights down low, read. If you really want to put the TV, put it on, but try and put it on a setting where the screen is not so bright, or whatever it is you need to do. But I just wouldn't lie there ruminating thoughts and stuff like that. But and you can break this pattern, I think, but I'm not quite sure how you do it. I mean, it's beyond me. I'm not a sleep therapist. I'm more, you know, the sleep hygiene side of things, what you need to do. But you can have therapy would give you CBT techniques and different ways of helping you to change that. But
yeah. And then a similar question, somebody else says, I definitely sleep better than I did when I was drinking, but I wake up tired and not feeling refreshed. And she says, I do have a good sleep regime with some meditation, a warm bath, the room is cool, but this quality of sleep still seems poor. And my Fitbit, you mentioned Fitbit earlier, tells me that I don't get enough deep sleep. It's exactly what you were saying. I often wake frequently during the night for loo breaks or twitchy legs. Funnily enough, I used to have that in the early weeks of the booze.
Oh, God, it's so
what the hell? I had no idea what that was about. No one had ever told me about that. And it was just the most bizarre thing. It knocked me for six on about the second week of being sober. I suddenly have this awful kind of leg cramp thing going on. Is that linked to magnesium? Am I right about that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, first of all, with that comment, I mean, if you're getting up through the night, this is the problem. You're disrupting all of those sleep cycles.
Yeah.
Could be at different stages of the cycle. So if you're constantly disrupting it at the REM stage, and if you're not getting enough REM sleep, that is going to make you feel a bit sort of ugh in the morning. So again, working out ways that you can address that. You know, why are you waking up? If you're waking up to use the bathroom, maybe don't drink anything. This sounds so basic, but maybe just don't drink anything a couple of hours before you go to bed. Some people suffer with heartburn, so we can talk about diet and sleep bit later, but maybe it's addressing that, digestive issues that are a problem. Restless leg, yeah, magnesium. I love magnesium. I think it's one of those supplements that's a really good one to try and take. Especially for women, women more than men, women don't get enough of it in their diet, and it's quite hard to absorb from food. You only absorb about 50% of the magnesium from food. So I would definitely take a supplement. Look for one that's got your daily dose, like 375 milligrams, I think, is the daily dose. Well, I know. So take that before you go to bed.
What about the sprays? Helps. Do you like the body sprays you can use? Or the magnesium salts in the bath?
Yeah, so the good thing about magnesium is it's absorbed through the skin as well as through the gut. And actually, for some people, they might absorb it better through the skin. You can also buy sprays, so it's on your tongue. It's good because it's also good for anxiety. It's good for anxiety. So what it does is in the brain, it binds to these things called GABA receptors, and that sort of quietens down the activity that's going on that's related to anxiety. I mean, I'm not going to say it's like a sleeping pill or anything like that, but it just works for some people. So well, I don't see the problem in just giving it a go. And it has, there's some research to say it might help restless leg syndrome as well. So
So in a sense, are you kind of saying that, look, if all things being equal, if you've got your reasonable, sleep hygiene in place, if your diet is okay, and we'll talk about that in a moment, but all things being equal, if you've kind of done what you think is all the good stuff, but you still are waking up and you know, you have this sense that you've had a very poor quality sleep or you just don't feel refreshed, is what you're saying, you need to then look at what else is going on. So what is the anxiety that might be going on? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, definitely. And that's the point, that if you're really struggling and, you know, my stuff's like, it's like top level stuff. It's the diet, it's the hygiene, it's the check boxes, right?
Yeah.
So beyond that, you could then maybe go and see a psychologist that deals with sleep, and that'll help you get deeper rooted to the issues that are really sort of, maybe it's a lot of anxiety. Anxiety is normally the biggest problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? And for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, to do with family issues, it could be doing money issues, meno anxiety. So women during the menopause, anxiety for me, when I see women during the menopause, is one of the biggest issues, that anxiety that comes with it. So that could be an issue. And I think that, yeah, psychologists can help you with that. There are people that specifically deal with sleep. If you really do have some form of insomnia, then it's essential that you go and see somebody to help you to deal with that. And they do like NLP coaching, NLP or CBD, it could be CBD coaching to help you to learn, teach yourself ways to get yourself back to sleep.
Yeah. Okay. And we've got one more question here, which I thought was really interesting. I think it might be Eleanor who said, can you ask Rob about natural forms of melatonin? You mentioned, you know, that melatonin obviously is what helps us to sleep. And Eleanor lives in France, and she's saying you can get a natural, like a herbal remedy, which contains lavender, St. John's wort, lemon balm, and also 9 milligrams, I think she says, is that 1.9? Anyway, some melatonin. And that's an interesting one because we'll talk about supplements and stuff as well. But in the UK, as you know, we can't buy melatonin over the counter. You can in the States.
Yeah, you can. You can get those gummies. And believe you me, I've tried all of this stuff. I've go every time they go to New York, come back with
stacks for you. Yeah.
Berry flavored gummies. But the weird thing is, so melatonin is the most of the evidence of melatonin is that it helps with jet lag.
Yeah.
So it helps you because you're working against your circadian rhythm. And what melatonin does is it triggers sleep. I'm not sure how effective it really is at helping you to sleep for longer. There's some research says it does, some research says it doesn't. So, but it's, again, I think it's worth giving it a go. You can actually order that melatonin stuff.
Can you?
Yeah,
but are you saying that might only be better for, you know, for traveling or whatever, rather than on a kind of nightly basis?
Yeah, I mean, I put it in my book and then I read all this research afterwards and I was like, oh, maybe that wasn't, it's not 100% because, like I said, it's more for jet lag. But I think the views are split. Mm. And I think it kind of does work for some, but I think the Bella melatonin, if you want to try it, I'd go to your doctors and get it prescribed because I think that's much better than those gummies.
Oh, they can do that, can they, in the UK?
Yeah, you can get it prescribed, and I've actually had it prescribed, and it actually really did help my sleep, which is what made me think, well, all these people saying it doesn't work, well, I actually found it quite useful. It helped me to get off to sleep, which was most beneficial. I mean, all those other herbs that, that your member was talking about are really useful. Lemon balm, lime leaf, lavender.
Valerian is another one,
valerian,
isn't it? That people talk about.
I love valerian, but it stinks. Absolutely.
But there must be a form you can take it in that doesn't stink, surely.
I had this tea that was actually okay, and it was this Elle Macpherson tea. She had a brand called Wellco. It's ridiculously expensive. I got given it by this PR, but it actually did help me to relax. It's the only one I've taken. It must have a very strong amount because it comes from hops, valerian. And it did make me very relaxed. So I like valerian. You can get it in a capsule and stuff like that, tablets. But yeah, I think it's quite good. And I just think if you just the process of making a really hot mug of these sort of steaming herbs, and if you set the environment right, I think they're probably a bit more effective.
Yeah, actually, there's a lovely one. There's a lovely one from there's a lovely one from Chuckling Goat. I don't know if you know that brand. They've got a lovely tea called Sing Me to Sleep, and it's like a proper tea, like proper kind of roots and leaves and flowers. It's lovely. So I quite often recommend that. So, but I think what you're sort of saying, I think in a way, is it's the thing that I bang on about all the time, you know, which is you know, when people are giving up the booze, is you still want something nice. So it's that keep the ritual, change the ingredients. And in a way, you're saying the same thing, is create a little bit of ritual around, you know, going to bed being an okay thing. Because I think otherwise we can get ourselves in a hell of a state, feeling so panicky that we're not going to be able to sleep, and then just sort of crashing out without any thought. But actually, we do need to make it a bit of a self-care ritual, don't we?
Yeah, and it's really nice, actually. I mean, I love it. I have a bath. I've got everything.
You love your bed.
Oils and the bed. Because if I have to make it that ritual to make it really inviting to go to bed. You know, when I walk into my room, it has to smell of lavender, and it's got to be really cool, just one little light. And I need to go in and know that that is the place that I'm going to sleep, and it's really inviting. Otherwise, it's kind of game over. It's just not very nice, especially when sleep just goes completely awry. It's just the worst feeling. So.
Yeah. And let's talk diet then. What helps nutritionally in terms of sleep? What foods, you know, we hear about things like tryptophan, or what's it in, and does it really make a difference?
Yeah, so food is there, because there's lots of other stuff going on. Food plays part of that bed thing that helps you to sleep. So, you know, I think it's not just the foods and the nutrients they contain, it's your food habits. So it's when you eat before you go to bed, it's, you know, how you eat. If you rush your food down, you know, indigestion is a big thing for a lot of people, and heartburn especially can prevent people from sleeping. So it's the types of food. You keep it really light at night. Heavy food takes longer to digest, and that produces more stomach acid, and that can cause heartburn. And promote heartburn in a lot of people. So you want to fix that, you know, eating mindfully so that you're digesting your food properly. In terms of the nutrients, so you talked about tryptophan. So tryptophan is good. Tryptophan is a really small amino acid that has to fight its way up into the brain to make serotonin, which is converted to melatonin. That's found in things like bananas, oats, meats, fish, all those kind of foods. So if you had those foods at night, it's quite a good supper dish, I guess. But what you need to do is combine that with the carbohydrate, because the carbohydrate draws all of those other amino acids away so that that tryptophan can make it up into the brain. So something like something really light, you could have a turkey stir fry with a little bit of brown rice or quinoa or something like that. That would be good. And it's actually where the old wives' tale came from, with honey and milk. So honey contains tryptophan, milk contains tryptophan, but honey is the carbohydrate to help tryptophan get up. And then it's really, you know, other foods like magnesium foods. So we talked about supplements, but you do find magnesium in things like dark green vegetables, nuts and seeds, oily fish again, those kind of foods.
What about chocolate?
Yeah, you do get it in chocolate, but all that sugar is not going to help you.
Yeah, no, that's true. But I was thinking about the really dark chocolate. I was thinking, give me a break.
No, that's not going to help. But I do make a sleepy tea. I do make a sleepy tea. And what I do is you put cashew nuts and water into a like a Nutribullet. So it makes like a cashew nut milk. Whack in some raw cacao or cocoa powder unsweetened. So it's really rich. And then I like to put in a little bit of coconut oil and some cinnamon and then just heat that up. And it is loaded with magnesium.
Lovely.
Not very high in sugar. So you just put a tiny bit of honey. So you've still got that really nice bitter chocolate flavor. But yeah, that's a nice thing. And then you've got things like B vitamins and calcium. They're also used to make melatonin. So just eating a good variety of foods, maybe focusing on magnesium foods, maybe planning your meals to have that sort of tryptophan carb balance at night is probably quite good. Try and avoid sugar. It's just a stimulant. You know, we haven't talked about coffee. Coffee is also a stimulant. We also have a gene in our body that means we're either slow metabolizers or fast metabolizers of caffeine. So when I did my DNA test, to whatever it was worth, it did say that I was a very slow metabolizer of caffeine. So I know that I'm really jittery when I drink caffeine. So I won't have anything after midday. And I just think that's a good rule of thumb if you can't sleep. You know, that first coffee is always amazing, but that one about 3 o'clock just feels a bit grubby, like you didn't really want it.
Yeah. Somebody was asking actually about whether cortisol releases again. She's heard that cortisol releases again after 10 o'clock at night. Is that any truth in that?
I don't think after 10, because 9 to 10 is when the body starts to, wants to produce melatonin because it gets dark. You produce cortisol to help get you up in the morning. So that last bit of the sleep cycle, the body produces stops producing melatonin and releases cortisol to sort of get you out of bed. And actually waking up is just as important as going to bed for me. I think that you want to wake up nicely. So make sure you've got as much natural light as possible. So the body switches into sort of wake mode. Don't turn your phone on too quickly.
Absolutely. So many people are guilty of that, I know. Before you've even landed of a morning, you're into everybody else's world, I know.
Well, the phone thing is really weird. So, you know, we're all addicted to our phones, but I think if you can leave it, I don't keep my phone on in the room, and I try not to look at it an hour before bed, because A, it stresses me out, because I start thinking about everything I need to do. And actually, you talked about cortisol. If you start getting stressed, you will produce cortisol, and that is going to interrupt melatonin production. So that is going to help prevent you from sleeping. And when you wake up, just don't be in a rush. Just wake up nicely, have your breakfast. You know, nothing's that urgent. Don't put yourself in a bad mood.
Do you think it's okay? Do you think it's okay to do that kind of snooze thing, you know, with the alarm? Or are you one of these people who believe you should kind of choose what time you're getting up and make it a case of, okay, the alarm goes out of bed,
Just get up. It's not going to make any difference. And if you happen to fall asleep for just a little bit too long and you go into that deep sleep, you're going to wake up really groggy, and it's just not a very nice way to start the day. Get up, open all the windows, you know, get up, go for a walk, whatever you've got to do to wake yourself up and feel alive, I think is my view, you know.
Excellent.
And if you're not drinking and you've managed to get to sleep early, and, you know, nothing beats that feeling.
Absolutely.
Even if you've kind of been up and you're feeling a little bit sort of rusty, Just to get up and get out and get some light, get some fresh air, I think is the best thing you could do rather than just rolling over and hitting.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's one of the things that, you know, that people find when they ditch the booze, when the sleep does kind of kick in and start to feel better, and you just get that amazing feeling when you wake up. So, oh my God, I'm sober. It's so fantastic. That never goes away, that happy feeling.
Yeah, and you look forward to waking up as well, which is quite nice because you're going to wake up fresh.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love that feeling.
Brilliant. Rob, it's great to chat to you about all this stuff. Just remind us of your book and where we can find out more about your work.
Okay, so my book, that book's The Art of Sleeping. You can get that on Amazon. You can also find my cookbook, The Detox Kitchen Bible, on Amazon. You can follow me on Instagram, which is Rob Hobson Nutritionist. And you can go to my website at robhobson.co.uk.
Excellent. Thank you, Rob.
Perfect.
So don't forget, if you do want to join us in the Sober Club, just go to thesoberclub.com. There is a membership fee, but it's a full membership portal and a very supportive community. And it's small. It's not one of those kind of big ones. It's really very small and very supportive. And we do have some amazing content. And there's an extra session with Rob, Q&A in there. And coming up on Monday, we have our big 1 year anniversary of the Sober Club. We're going to have not one, but two amazing online parties with some very special guests. Check it all out anyway at thesoberclub.com. Meanwhile, we've got some really cool competitions right now, because some of you know that I run the Platinum Awards for Natural Products and Services. And we have a category for alcohol-free drinks. Of course we do. And we've got some great entries. I'm so pleased that a bunch of my favourite brands have entered. Ginesque have entered this year. Sippling are in there. Naughty. Liars. I've just done a lovely blog post for Liars, just talking about some of their amazing. I mean, I've yet to sample every flavour, but they're just incredible. Going to be bringing you a podcast with Mark from Liars as well. They're such a unique brand. So you can win most of these along with other, you know, health and well-being products. So if you have a look at soberclub.com, there's a blog post there. If you can't find it there, have a look at the show notes and I'll link you directly to where these competitions are. I mean, you've got to be in it to win it, right? It's got to be worth a try. Have a go. Get yourself over to our competitions. I'm also going to be supporting, hosting, whatever the expression is, a non-toxic pop-up shop. That's all part of our awards. Normally we would have a big event, of course, but we can't this year. But the awards announcement will be on the 23rd of September. And from the 17th of September, we have a pop-up shop featuring some of the great products, the natural products. So if that's something you're interested in, check it out. It's in Bloomsbury at Hello Love. It's the amazing Hello Beautiful Foundation, the cancer charity they have there. So if you're in the UK and you can pop by their fabulous little vegan cafe and little shop there in Bloomsbury, then check that out with some of our awards products. So there's a lot going on, to say the least. But I would love to hear from you. Always love to know if there's any guests you would like to suggest for the podcast. You know, I'm always pitching out to try and get people on the podcast who can bring you some great info and tips and advice and all the rest of it. And I've had some amazing guests. I feel so blessed for that, really. And for the people that come and offer us content for the Sober Club. It's amazing. We've got some really tapped into some great people. So let me know if there's anyone you'd like me to try and interview. Obviously, I'd love you to connect on social media at Janie Lee Grace and on Facebook at Janie Lee Grace Loves. Don't forget, I offer coaching as well, one-to-one coaching, very limited number of clients, but reach out if that's something that you're interested in. And whatever's going on for you right now, just stay grounded. I say that because it sometimes feels as though people are just kind of really ungrounded right now. I don't know what's going on. But anyways, stay grounded. And if you're doing this sober thing, give yourself a massive hug. Oh, I must tell you just quickly before I finish. I'm also involved in the Wonderment Festival. This happened last year in just outside Reading. It's a beautiful setting. It's a natural detox retreat, I suppose you could call it. It's all very wild and natural, and you can, and there's bell tents, or you can take your own tent, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that's going on there. It's an absolutely wonderful event, and I'm so pleased to be speaking there on the Sunday. I think it will be. I'll be speaking about health and well-being, and no doubt sobriety too. So if that's something you're interested in, check the show notes and I'll give you the link. Wherever you are in the world, whatever's going on for you, I'm sending you a big virtual hug. See you next time. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.